What does it cost you not to let it go? Really start to look at, okay, these lower level tasks that you could be delegating, outsourcing, maybe you can't do all of it immediately, but maybe there's certain things that you're like, you know what, if I hire a VA or an assistant, I can start letting go, and it means I can then drive more revenue and it's going to pay for itself.
Welcome to Lessons in Leverage, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of success. We'll help you unlock the secrets of leverage so you can amplify your impact in the world. Here's your host, Spencer Lowe.
Welcome back to another episode of Lessons in Leverage. I'm excited to be joined today by someone that I admire and that I've seen and been networked with actually for a while on LinkedIn. His name's Byron Morrison, and he's a best-selling author, speaker, and mindset and high-performance coach. He's been helping people, and especially entrepreneurs and CEOs across 15 countries, to become who they need to be to break through to the next level of success. So, Byron, really excited to have you here. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me here today. I'm excited to be here as well.
So, Byron, take me back to, I'd like to go all the way back to band performing, Byron, and talk to me about when your earliest part of the journey, when you were really early on, what got you into entrepreneurship? How did your journey really start as far as kind of building businesses on your own before you kind of got to where you are today?
So truth be told, like when I first started, I just wanted to help people. My journey really began after my dad had cancer. Like during his treatment, he had most of his bowel surgically removed, and he spent 25 days in ICU, most of life support and breathing through a tracheostomy. And luckily he pulled through, something that I'm eternally grateful for. But for me was this realization that I had to do something different with my life. Like at the time I was overweight, I was burnt out, I was stuck in a job that was killing me. And I just realized that if I didn't change my ways, I was going to end up like he did. So I spent the next few years kind of focusing on how to turn my health around, how to get my life in sync, how to recover from burnout and overwhelm. And as I got through that journey, I saw that there were so many other people struggling like I was. So I had this big idea. I was like, you know what? I'd love to write a book, pass on what I learned to help other people get under control. So I spent the next few years kind of writing a book and building a business, helping people from around the world really get their health under control. And while I was really good at the helping people part, truth be told, I was completely in over my head when it came to running a company. I'd never managed people before. I'd never dealt with big decisions. I never had to deal with all these competing priorities. And I just found myself completely stretched thin and overwhelmed. And I remember just looking at my calendar with this feeling of dread over the battle that I needed to fight next. So I was really like, if I don't figure out how to turn this around, I'm going to have to throw in the towel. So I spent the next few years learning about leadership and mindset and psychology and managing people, really trying to figure out how do I become an effective leader for my business. And at the time, I was also working with a lot of entrepreneurs and business leaders to really get their life in sync. And a lot of the things that were affecting their energy and their sleep and their stress were the challenges that I went through myself. And I uncovered that helping them navigate it wasn't just what I loved to do, it was my superpower. So that's really where I shifted my company to the work I'm doing today. So that's really like a top level of, I had a problem, I figured out how to solve it myself, and then it progressed into helping other people do the same.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really interesting. What shifted in your business as you had that realization? You know, you talked about, you know, you were at first kind of going through your own journey, and as you shifted to having more of a mastery of that and wanting to help others, what changed about your mindset, your beliefs, your approach? Tell me about that moment.
The big shift was moving away from trying to do everything myself, because I see this in a lot of the people that I work with as well. And there's a really big difference between being a founder or a manager and being a CEO. Like as a founder, generally, you have to be involved in everything. If anything, you need to in order to grow. That's how you build momentum and gain traction. But when you start to scale, what a lot of first-time entrepreneurs and CEOs and founders fail to recognize is your focus needs to become far more honed in. Because when you have stakeholders to keep happy and team members to manage and all these other moving parts, there's only so much time in the day. And you're either going to be able to do a few things really well or many things mediocre or badly. And this is why it's so important to recognize that everything you do has a cost. Every hour you spend in one thing is an hour that's coming at the expense of something else. And that was why one of the big things that I had to learn was to leverage my time. It was really starting to figure out, okay, these are the things that I have to do. This is where my time has the greatest impact. And these are the things I either need to hire around or delegate or get off my plate because they're taking me away from what's our ultimate to get to that next level and drive growth?
So maybe you can tell me either about how your experience with this, or maybe you can tell me just what you've noticed as you've worked with so many other founders and entrepreneurs. But, you know, something I see a lot is people that then are wondering, like, is it the right time? There's kind of this shift you talked about. Early on, you kind of have to be involved. You have to be in the weeds. You have to get that traction, that initial traction. And, you know, you may not have the money, the ability to delegate, to hire someone. So you may not have the resources yet to do that. And so a lot of kind of that very early stage founder success is in doing the exact opposite of what you're helping people awaken to doing as they grow and scale. And so how do you think about that problem of knowing when is the right time? Like, what can you start right from the beginning? You know, despite the fact that you still have to be in the weeds, what are some of the entry level skills you can just pick up early on, even though you have to be very heavily involved in the operation still? And then as you get to that point where you can delegate or start pulling out of a lot of the operations and running the business, how do you know the timing's right and that you're able to do that? What are some of the things you watch, or how do you evaluate that with your clients?
So there's two different ways that I would generally approach this. The first and one of the easiest ways I see is to start to figure out, okay, what is an hour of your time worth? Let's say, to keep it really simple, that like a CEO or business owner or entrepreneur listening to this, figure out that an hour of their time is worth $1,000, just to kind of keep things like really easy to follow here. As in, if they put an hour into the business, they could generate $1,000 in sales, in revenue, in impact, whatever that may look like. Well, then it's really starting to audit like what they're doing through the lens of how much could they pay someone else to do what's on their plate? Because if they're doing tasks that they could pay an assistant $30 an hour to do, them doing it themselves is actually costing them money. And by starting to approach it this way, it's easier to actually make the decision of, do you know what? Me continuing to do this is actually losing the business money. So yes, I may have to find a way to invest this up front, but that's going to free me up to actually drive more growth. I'll give you an example of this quickly. There was a client that I was working with a few years ago, and one day we go on a coaching call and I could tell they was notably stressed. And I thought it was because he had an upcoming board meeting they was needing to prepare for. And when we started talking about what actually came out was that he was worrying about the fact that the week after he had a business trip that he needed to prepare for. He needed to sort his flights, arrange a car, like organize hotels and the itinerary. And all of this, he spent the last 2 hours worrying about what needed to get done. Now, sorting this would probably only take 45 minutes. But the problem is, he had so much to do for his board meeting and other tasks and things going on that getting this done, while it was important, it wasn't a good use of his time. In fact, this is exactly why a few months prior, he hired an assistant, but he was so used to doing it himself that he hadn't thought to let it go. And this is why it was really getting him to start to recognize that all the time and energy he put into worrying about it and doing it and resolving it was time he could have spent in actually growing the business. And that's why, going back to my point of anyone listening to this, you need to start looking in a sense of what does it cost you not to let it go? Really start to look at, okay, these lower level tasks that you could be delegating, outsourcing, maybe you can't do all of it immediately, but maybe there's certain things that you're like, you know what, if I hire a VA or an assistant, I can start letting go, and it means I can then drive more revenue and it's going to pay for itself. So that's the first way. The second way is to look at it through the lens of, okay, these are the things that are not a good use of your time. What would you need in place to be able to let them go? Maybe even you set a time frame. It's like, I've got a guy at the moment who he really wants to hire a COO for the business, but he doesn't have it in the budget right now. So we've set a target that by June, he's going to have in place enough budget to be able to hire someone to take a lot of these tasks off his plate. So that means he's really got a guided thing of, okay, I'm going to do these things for the next 3 months now, but then it's going to allow me to free myself up to hire someone to take it over. So that's really how I'd advise anyone listening to this. Either figure out how do you free up the money to pay for it so that you can kind of actually get yourself available, or set a time frame and start working towards it, with the goal being having enough budget to be able to do so then.
So as you're implementing those tactics, I imagine sometimes you get pushback. Imagine sometimes people don't believe it's possible. They couldn't possibly let that thing go. Or maybe it's not money, right? We kind of brought up the money question, but beyond that, there could be a lot of reasons. What are some of the biggest obstacles you see of why people don't make this shift, that why they won't let go? Is it just as simple as they've never done the exercise of valuing their time and thinking about what it costs? Or is do you find that beyond that, even once you've shown them the cost, that sometimes there's other maybe emotional drivers that people find tough to let go of?
The biggest one is hands down the fear or belief that no one else can do it as well as them. So therefore, it's easier and better just to do it themselves. And I hear this all of the time. It's like someone like, oh, by the time I've explained it and handed it off, I could have just done it. And I completely get it. Like, I've been the same in my business. Like, there's various tasks where I'm like, do you know what? It'll be easier just for me to continue doing it. But that is a very short-minded way of approaching business. Because if you look at any great company, it wasn't grown by one person. It's a team of people coming together that has led to their kind of growth and success. And the more that you play the short game of hanging on to these tasks, the more it's going to keep you stuck in the weeds. Because yes, it may only take you 30 minutes to do it, but how many of those 30-minute tasks do you have over the course of the week? That stacks up in hours, which then at the end of a month or year is a huge amount of time that could be lost. Also, it goes back to being a leader that empowers their team. Because if you're worried that your team isn't going to be as capable as you, either you haven't done a good job hiring the right people, or you haven't given them the guidance and support they need to actually step up and do their job, which means you need to take a step back and really focus on how do you clearly communicate? How do you set the right expectations? How do you have feedback loops and accountability in place to make sure someone gets results? This is very uncomfortable letting go, especially when you're so used to doing things a particular way. And this is why you need to really figure out, okay, what at the end of the day, even if someone does it 80% of the quality that you would, is that enough? That doesn't mean except mediocre, sloppy work, but that perfectionist mindset is just going to get in the way of growth. So you need to really start to balance, okay, what is going to be a result that you can be at peace with? Because it's still going to get the same outcome. May not be the exact same way you would do it, but it's not going to lead to problems or mistakes or issues down the line. So that's the big one, starting to balance and developing that awareness.
Yeah, I see that all the time. I think that's a great observation. And it opens up sort of a follow-up question, which is this idea of, you know, you said sometimes you might have just not done a good job hiring. One thing that I know I went through at various points in my business, and I still go through at times, is just this concept of hiring for roles that I've never hired for, or hiring someone to do something that I'm not yet an expert on. I think early stage founders find it really easy to hire people to do things they know how to do, because they can hire someone for character, culture fit, and just teach them. And so that's sort of it's one of the easiest ways to hire, I have found, is to find people that have the right character, the right attitude, et cetera, and you teach them all the skills. But that is a growth constraining approach, because you can only teach people so fast. And certainly as the business gets bigger, you can only teach so many people so fast. And so the idea of that approach of let me find good people that have all the right, maybe soft skills or mentality, and I'll give them all of the technical skills and training, that only gets you so far. So how do you walk through leaders through this process of they need to hire, say, this person that wants to hire a COO, and maybe they've never hired a COO or even a C-level executive at all. Maybe they're hiring someone that has more experience than them. What are some of the difficulties around that? And how do you coach people through being able to successfully hire those people that are maybe in an area they're less familiar, or it's the first time they're hiring them?
Yeah. Before I answer that, one of the things I would just also want to throw in here of like going back to the mistakes people make when it comes to hiring. One of the biggest ones I see is people base it too much on, do I like this person? Like I had one CEO that I was working with, she had so many issues where her big basis when it came to the interviews was judging like, is this someone I get on with? She wasn't really diving into their skill set or clarifying, could they do the job? And I had to point out to her, like, you're not hiring friends here. You're hiring competent people to help you grow your company. But because she was going too much on her instinct of, is this someone I'll get on with? That was really causing her to make short-sighted decisions. And this is why the advice that I gave her is like, and going back to your question, if you're not fully sure what you're looking for, you need to firstly define what is the scope of the role? Like, what is it you're trying to get out of? What is the impact you're looking this person to come in and make in the business? Then start to look at, okay, what are their responsibilities that you need? What is the hole that you need them to fill? And then also having open conversations with them and being like, look, these are the challenges we're having. When you come in, like, how would you approach this? What would you need to do? What were the kind of targets that you would set? And really start to base, can you see that fitting the mold of the company? Not just from a culture fit, but do they have the right ideas that they could come in and shape the position themselves? The other one, and this is really where I'm a big advocate, is if you don't know how to do something, pay someone to do it for you. It's like, if you're not an expert in hiring, get like a really decent headhunter or recruiter or an HR person who knows how to audit and pick the right people. Yes, it's going to cost you money up front, but making the wrong decision is going to cost you even more. And that's why you'd be better off getting someone who can actually talk you through it, who's hired COOs or people in that position, whatever you need, and can be like, you know what, this is what I need. This is the challenges I'm having in my business. This is our goals and where we're trying to grow. Help me find somebody who fits that mold. So that's the advice I would always give. It's like, figure out what you need, but then also don't be afraid to get support.
Yeah, I think there's so much value packed in there. I mean, I certainly have seen that concept of hiring someone you like or hiring for culture fit and under evaluating the actual skills. I saw this cool matrix that I think Cody Sanchez shared out where she went through, like, this is their hiring matrix, and they look at a few things, but the one that really popped off the page to me that they weight really heavily is, has this person done this exact thing you need them to do? The result, have they gotten the result you're trying to get for a similar company in a similar industry at a similar size? Like, the closer you can get to, you know, you were saying, know the result you're trying to get to. And that is such an empowering element of them being able to hire the right person, because you know what you're looking for. Even if you don't know the skills yourself, you know, I'm looking for someone who has a demonstrated history of this at this type of company, this industry, et cetera. And that's essentially what makes great recruiters. They do that. They really heavily index on finding the demonstrated performance that you need, and they interrogate you to figure out what it is you really need so that they can get that description clear. And so, yeah, I think that can be a daunting skill set for people, but is like a critical ingredient if you're going to start following this advice of hiring, delegating, empowering people. So moving from there, you know, as these businesses are starting to transition into this scaling mindset, what do you see then as some of the role of AI? Are there any areas that you think, you know, that you're coaching people on, or that you're working with people on, or that you're very interested in terms of how people that need to reclaim more of their time need to work on the business, not in the business? Sort of some of these, they're somewhat cliche, but they're real transitions that happen that people have to work through. What role do you see AI playing, and are you expecting AI to play in that transition?
Like, to be completely honest, in the work I do, AI is not something that we really leverage, simply because so much of kind of the conversations that I'm having with CEOs and leaders, it's how do they navigate day-to-day problems, which for the most part are other people. Like, a lot of the kind of CEOs and founders I work with, they are amazing at what they do, developing products, kind of bringing expertise to market. What they've never done is lead a team, bring out the best in those around them, have difficult conversations, really kind of know when to push back and set boundaries. That's really where I come in and help them navigate it. So that's always going to be a person-to-person challenge. It's not something that they can outsource to AI or get a script to handle for them. It's really figuring out how do they up-level their own skill set of knowing how to deal with those problems. So that's why I wouldn't be the person to kind of talk in on AI and kind of how to leverage that, because it's really not what we do. And I think it's a really interesting question, but this is kind of where I also see a cause for concern, because so many people get excited of how can I make my life easier with AI? And they look for ways to remove themselves from facing what the actual issue is. Like, I see it with so many CEOs I work with who, you'd be surprised, like for weeks or months at a time, they'll avoid stuff like having tough conversations because they don't want to do it. It's like, I get it, but it's also part of the role. And the more you leave these issues to manifest, underperformance continues, kind of problems continue to go on, like issues occur in the culture. And that's why they need to face it head on. And I think stuff like AI and tech and a lot of these things, while it's amazing, not take you away from it, it's also another thing to put in the way to avoid the things you should be doing.
Yeah, that's a really smart insight. I think anytime you're avoiding the truth or avoiding a hard conversation or avoiding something that's more painful, that's not going to get you very far. So I think it's a great point. And I also, you know, one of the things that I would predict and that I think is going to happen over the next 5 to 10 years is technical skills will be increasingly commoditized by AI, and it will shine an even brighter light on the interpersonal skills, the beliefs, the mindsets, the human-to-human connection, these things that you're coaching these CEOs on, because increasingly, if you were someone who in the past, your entire business advantage or the reason that you were so successful is just that you had some technical skill that was in that was scarce, that was in short supply. Well, as soon as I can ask AI to do that technical skill for me, I can replace you. And as those come on parity, if that's your moat, if that's your defensible position, I think people are going to find that it's not very defensible. So we have a staff that is very technical, and we spend time every week right now teaching them soft skills. We do soft skills training, and it's all about mindset, you know, interpersonal skills, leadership, all these things, because what I'm telling them is, look, 5 to 10 years from now, this is what's going to define you. The fact that you're someone who can get technical results using AI and using the latest tech, but can do it in a way that actually addresses the human side that people, as you pointed out, are less and less connected to, and sometimes are more and more looking to avoid, and using technology as a barrier. And so they're texting instead of calling. They're trying to like lean into, how do I get away from the actual tension of this conversation, looking in someone's eyes, having a real heart-to-heart or a hard moment. And all of the results in the future, I think, at least in the short-term future, will be by those people. Because if you have that soft skill, that bucket of soft skills, if you have the ability to lead and to address things and help humans change, I mean, as tech increases in velocity, there's more and more need to help humans change. And humans do not like change. As you pointed out, even us as entrepreneurs, we don't like the change. We don't want to let go. And so tech will keep pushing us to change even faster. And so this emotional fitness, this sort of emotional ability to adapt and to then lead others through adaptation and through change, I think will be a superpower.
Yep. I completely agree. And one thing I would just throw into there as well, I think this is going to be an even bigger problem in the coming years. Because if you have a look at kind of society at the moment, a lot of younger people, they're so used to being connected that they're more disconnected than ever before. Like you mentioned, with it's easier to text than to call. They don't have the social skills. They don't know how to have the conversations. They don't know how to approach topics, giving feedback or communicating. And it's a huge issue when it comes to leadership and bringing out the best of those around you. And this is something that you're not going to be able to outsource to AI. Like the technical skills, yes, but there's always going to be people involved. And this is really where I'm saying, like, coming in, like, you have to learn to navigate these parts of the role. And this is where I see so many first-time CEOs that I work with struggle. Because it's not something you learn in business school. Like, you learn about strategy and finance and operations, but most of your time and the biggest struggles are going to be people. It's going to be those tough conversations, people's emotions, people not feeling like they're getting support. Those are the things you have to learn to navigate. And the people that recognize it, that's going to be their superpower. They're the ones who are really going to bring out the best in their team. And ultimately, that's going to lead to more growth and sustainability.
Yeah, I think it's a great insight. So if someone is listening to this and they say, maybe they're a CEO, maybe they're an entrepreneur, maybe they're just, you know, trying to grow their career and they see the value of these skills, where should they start in terms of your books? You obviously have 4 different books: Become a Better You, CEO in Control, The Effective CEO, Maybe You Should Give Up. And I believe Maybe You Should Give Up is the most recent one. Do I have that right?
Yeah. To anyone listening who's not a CEO, Maybe You Should Give Up is the book I would start with. It sounds like a really negative title, but that was the point. Like, it's not about giving up on your goals and dreams. It's about giving up on everything that's standing in the way of them. So it's very much a book about self-sabotage and getting you out of your own way. The next book I would say is kind of the book CEO in Control. That's all about mindset and decision-making and really becoming an effective leader. So those are the ones I would say to anyone listening to this. Like, if you want to start really getting more in control of your thoughts and your emotions and your feelings and consistently doing what you need to do to create the life that you want, both of those books are going to be a solid kind of starting point to help you actually make that happen.
I love it. So I want to get a little bit into how you think about building your business. You know, we've talked a lot about some of the ways that you guide other businesses, but, you know, I'm very curious, you know, tell me about how have you looked at your journey? You have books, you have courses, you have consulting time. You've accomplished a lot of things and are building a really impressive business. And so how do you think about, as you're zooming out and you're delegating and applying all these same principles, how do you think about the role of, say, writing books versus the role of designing courses versus the role of advertising on LinkedIn and social media? And like, how do you really think about getting the most out of your time to build your business?
Yep. So for me, going back to the theme of this podcast, it's always about, how do I leverage my expertise and skill set and also make the best use of time possible? Like, just to be like an open book here, like if you look at the other my competition or people who do what I do, most of them are spending all of their time on social media, putting out content, and it's, especially with everyone else trying to build their brand, it's just an absolute flood and it's so difficult to stand out. So if I look at the trajectory of my career, what I did really well was I decided to be like, do you know what, if everyone else is doing that, I'm going to do something else. That was why I went and I wrote my books. Like, my books were very much focused on how can I pass on what I know to help as many people as possible reach a larger audience and build trust in a way that they then want to come and work with me. And that was one of the best business decisions I ever made, because not only does it position me as an expert, it also builds so much trust and authority that it's not then trying to sell people. People are already bought in. So it's a conversation of how do I get further support, whether it's me with my courses or anything else I have to offer. So for me, it was really like looking at, okay, what am I doing? What is not a good use of time? What's not building momentum? And how can I then leverage that, create a bigger impact? And that's really how I approach decisions, because putting those together took months. There was not a, let's just do this and launch it. But it was something, it was a long-term play, which has paid off. And that's kind of how I try and approach everything. It's the same as, yeah.
So you would say that the books have been the biggest form of leverage for kind of building your business?
Hands down, 100%. And it's like, now that I've got those in place, the next thing I'm focusing on is building out a YouTube, because I found this, it's not really something that I've done before, but I've got a few videos on there, and I found some of the kind of customers, both in courses and consulting time, have said to me that, oh, I've been watching your YouTube videos and have kind of connected the dots. Do you know what? That's, again, more of a long-term play. And I actually spent most of last week, I think I filmed like 7 YouTube videos. I just kind of knocked them out, because I'm like, you know, that's an evergreen. Again, it's a leverage of my time. Whereas previously, a lot of what I would do is just like writing content. Like every single day, it's just like a couple of hours of my time. And while it's important, it's something I still do, I'm now looking more of, okay, if I want to scale, I need to leverage my time in a sense of what can I do that's running on autopilot without me? And that's kind of the books. Then the next thing is YouTube and just building up these resources. So it requires less of me to get an even better result.
So you're doing all this. This is very high leverage in terms of the value you're providing to the marketplace and your ability to really get your message and your expertise out to as many people as possible. How do you apply that internally at your company? Because something I've always wondered, you know, and I've sort of gone back and forth on, like, I think about that the same way inside of my company of like, you know, should I, like, anywhere that I, if I think I should do a training, can I record it, turn it into something that could be reused, something that someone can watch in onboarding, et cetera? Like, how do I turn my efforts there once into something that can be used many times or over a long period of time? But I also find that one of the most rewarding things that I enjoy is just working with my people, working with people one-on-one, coaching them, helping them have individual breakthroughs in their own mindset, their own beliefs, the things that might be holding them back. You know, I think a little bit about one of the people in this space that I admire a lot, Tony Robbins. And I look at the fact he's still doing seminars because he gets so much out of it. He doesn't need to do it. It doesn't even make financial sense. He's losing money on his time being at those seminars at this point. But, you know, at least you can make the argument. But he loves that connection with the people, right? And so I look at that and I think, what's the balance of that? When I'm trying to think about like the best ways internally to use, to create leverage and have the biggest impact for my company and the most return on my time, but also carve out time for just the things that really are fulfilling to have that individual personal time with people I care about.
Yeah, that goes back to what I was saying at the beginning of this. It's like figuring out where does your time have the greatest impact and getting anything off your plate that shouldn't be done by you. It's like the way I approach what I take on is like, I've got a rock star assistant and it's just like stuff I don't want to do, I delegate to her. It's the same as like going back to like my book campaign last year. Like it was like a 15-month campaign. It was intense. Like there was so much stuff that if I cloned myself like 3 times, I still wouldn't get it all done. So I really had to start looking at, okay, how do I leverage team members and people around me to really hand this off? And I had several people that I was working with, like on kind of podcast booking and kind of doing all of this outreach and just so many different tasks. So like, do you know what? It's going to be better for me to pay someone else to take this off so that I can be creative and do content and the things that excite me. And this is where I also see people go in the wrong direction, because I talk a lot in my books and content and to clients about getting yourself out of everything that's not a good use of your time. But there is a point where you can go too far. Like going back to your kind of thing of what excites you, like I had this conversation a few months ago with a client who, really clever engineer. Like he built the startup, scaled it, like one of the smartest people I've ever met. And he came to me at a point where he was just like really unhappy. Like he was just so stuck in the kind of the top level stuff that every single morning was just a battle to get out of bed. And we started looking at what was missing. And the thing that he'd taken off his plate because it was not a good use of his time was working on product. And on paper, it wasn't. It wasn't something he should be involved in anymore. But that was the thing he enjoyed most. So I had to push him and be like, you know what? While this may not make financial sense, you need to give yourself permission to spend a few hours every week in the lab, mess around with tech, play with product, have some fun again. He gave himself like the time to do that, and it reignited the passion for the business. He remembered why he started in the first place. And that's why you really need to look objectively. Like just because something isn't a good use of your time doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. It's like what also gives you that fun and excitement? Because if you're not enjoying your day, what's the point? So yeah, it's kind of twofold in that. It's like figure out the things that you shouldn't be doing and get them off your plate, but then also give yourself permission to have fun and innovate and do things that excite you.
Do you find that in your business, consulting directly with clients is one of those items for you where it keeps you developing your craft? It's a passion thing because that's the least scalable part probably of your business. Anytime you're directly working with clients, but I imagine you also find that really valuable, whether it's learning new things, practicing your craft, developing content for the books and everything else. What's that balance like for you?
That's where I spend the bulk of my time because it's a thing I like to do. Like it makes me want to get out of bed in the morning. And it's just like, I found like as an example, like when I was doing the last book, I had to cut down on my consulting time because that book campaign basically became a full-time job. Like it was taking me like 30 hours a week for like a good 15 months. I had to reduce the amount of client work that I did. Yeah, when I started to transition out of that, I found like, do you know what? This is really what I was missing. So the way I've built my business, it allows me to spend the bulk of my time doing that. Could I make more money going other avenues? Yes. But again, I'm a big like supportive, like what gives you joy in your life? Because I don't know about you, but I've had periods in my business where I'm just like resenting it. And it's like things are like tough and it's just like, what's the point? And is it worth it? And it's that's why I'm now like, life is short. And it's just like, what are you going to regret doing at the end of your days? And this is why I'm a big push of kind of, what are the things that make you want to get out of bed? What are the things that actually excite you? Is if you're not happy, like, it's not going to be worth it long term. And it's just like, going back to like the coaching and consulting space, I've worked with so many mentors who pushed me. They're like, you need to launch a group program and you need to do this because it's going to be scalable. It's how you're going to make more money. I'm like, yeah, but it's not going to make me happy. Like I've done that. I didn't enjoy it. I want to work with someone one-on-one so we can go deep and we can explore these ideas and really support them at the highest level. So you can have it both ways though. Like I've built a business that financially gives me the life I want, but I've also kind of I've refused to compromise on other areas because it's incongruent with the business I actually want to be building. So it's kind of having that balance and knowing when to trust yourself, and just because someone else is doing it another way doesn't mean you have to as well.
Yeah, I think that this is another common mistake that I see young leaders, young entrepreneurs make, and certainly I have made and probably still make from time to time, which is, am I using the right lens to evaluate the decision? You know, and really it's almost, am I asking the right question? Because the question you ask, you know, shapes your focus and your perspective of the problem. And so if I ask a question like, is this financially optimal? Then looking at it through a purely financial lens, I might get a certain answer. But you can't make, well, you can make every decision in your life through a financially optimal lens and you'll end up with really good financial health. And that's maybe it. You will have probably nothing else because there's a trade-off to everything. And so I think a big thing people struggle with is knowing, getting in touch with their own identity, getting in touch with what really drives them, what they are hoping to get out of life at large. And then being able to use that to calibrate how often and in what areas do I look first through a financial lens? How much and how often, where do I look through a happiness lens? You know, how much do I look at this through the lens of what it's going to mean for my family, my children, my wife? How much do I look at this in terms of what it means for me spiritually or through, you know, my relationships? Like these different areas of life that people find meaningful, you know, and so often the problems in our life are not because of the mistakes we're making. It's because we're doing so well in somewhere else and it's taking away. I've been the least healthiest physically in my life when I was succeeding the most in business, because it wasn't that I didn't want to be healthy. It was that I was willing to give up anything to make my business work and get it to where I needed it at the time. And then I developed the luxury of being able to say, great, now I realize truly my health is more important than business. And it probably always should have been. But now I recalibrated that to where every day I'm doing things for my health, because I know that if I am healthy and live a really high quality of life in that regard, I'm going to show up better at work. I'm going to make better decisions. I'm going to feel better, going to live longer. Really, I just value it more than financial success now. But it took me a while to get there and to really form my values and understand them enough to give myself permission to say, there's going to be times these conflict. And occasionally I'll let business trump if I really think it's a short-term sort of need of something. But by and large, the 90 to 95% of the time, when those conflict, health is going to come first. And it means I'm going to look at this through the health lens. And I should have plenty of time in the time I've allocated to business success to optimize that such that the business can thrive and be successful and I can achieve my goals without taking away from the health goals. Or, you know, same thing with my family. I only allocate a few hours at the end of the day to my family. So I need to be really rigid. If I want to have healthy relationships and happiness there, I need to be really rigid in defending that time, even from business, even from other things that really matter to me, because I only have like 2.5 hours with my kids. If I go up at 5 o'clock and we have dinner together, and then I have a little bit of time after dinner, and then they're in bed at 7:30. So their whole experience with me for that entire day was during that window. And if I'm like, oh, I had to work late, work till 7 today, I expanded work by a small percentage, but I took 80, 90% out of my family bucket and out of my kids' bucket and the experience they have. And so it's that, to me, I think, is a whole skill set of trying to figure out what's the right lens to look through and how do I balance those lenses. Is that something you see people struggle with? And if so, maybe what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, like all the time. And I love the fact that you've got that work here in harmony. I think the first step in kind of turning it around is actually being honest with yourself. Because the amount of times I speak to people and they're like, I just need to get through this project and then I'll have more time, or I just need to get this raise done and then I'll be less stressed. But and this is something that we're all guilty of. But how many times have you said to yourself that once you hit that next goal, that next milestone, that next threshold, that's when you'll take some time off, you'll be more present with your family, you'll prioritize yourself. But isn't that what you said the time before that? And the reality is, you're never going to get to where you want to be. Whatever you're telling yourself right now, as soon as you get close, the goal line's going to move. And not only that, but every new level of success brings it with it new levels of problems, like new demands, new responsibilities, new things that need your focus and attention. So if you're telling yourself that at some point you're going to be able to slow down, it's not going to happen. And this is why I'm such a big advocate. If you need to stop treating life and success and what you're trying to achieve as a sprint, and start recognizing it's a marathon. And going back to your point, like, you're never going to be able to show up properly as the leader your business needs if you're exhausted and burnt out. And this is why I'm such a big advocate of, instead of trying to get your life in balance with your career, you've got to turn it on its head. Like, the way I always advise it to clients is to start and figure out what are the key things in your life that are most important. Time for exercise, time with the family, time with the kids, whatever that may be. And you need to schedule that first. Then from there, build your calendar and everything else around that. But just scheduling, it's not enough. You also have to make a decision that these things are not a nice to have. These are a non-negotiable, which unless the building's on fire, you're not going to drop them. You treat them in the same way as you would a meeting with your most important client, that regardless of what's going on, you're going to find a way to go and make it happen. But this itself is where effective planning becomes so important, because it's not just scheduling that event. It's also what you do directly before it. Like, I'll give you an example. I had one client I was working with who, he was having big problems in his marriage and he kept having the right intentions. He'd be like, I'm going to have date night with my wife. But he had this reoccurring pattern that he would schedule it, but he wouldn't think what else he structured into that day. So it tended to happen. He would have all these meetings that would then either overrun or they would be so stressful that he'd then go to dinner and he'd be there mentally, physically be mentally checked out thinking about work. So the way we had to turn it around was to be really deliberate with what does he put directly before date night. What are the making sure that he doesn't have tasks there that are going to overrun, that are going to stress him out, that are going to cause him to be thinking about work. By doing so, he could then go and prioritize date night and have an engaged time with his wife. And it could be the same with you. Like if you've been like, you know what, 5 to 7:30 is time with the kids. You need to make sure that your tasks, 3 to 5 or whatever else, are not mentally consuming you. They're not something that could overrun or causing stress and overwhelm. You have to be more deliberate with how you structure your day, because that's going to directly determine, can you follow through as the best version of you?
Yeah, I love one of the things you pointed out in there, which is this idea of the I'll be happy when thinking is how I like to call it. And it's one of my favorite things to listen for when I'm coaching people on my team and with myself, because I still do it. I will find myself starting that narrative again of, oh man, as soon as we get this goal, as soon as we hit this revenue goal, as soon as we get this outcome, as soon as I hire these people, as soon as this happens, that's when. And that is probably when whatever pain you're looking at right now changes, but there's still going to be pain on the other side of it. And you're still going to be stressed. Like you said, the bar will move or there will be new pains and new challenges. And so anytime you hear that thinking in your head or you spot it in someone else, that's where you have to focus and find out, okay, I've got the wrong belief here. How do I bring it back into the present? I've started to sort of just burn the present for the future. I've started to just like use that. That thinking always seems to lead to being willing to light today on fire for tomorrow's success. And in some way, is there some priority I'm giving up? There's some happiness, even if it's just happiness, I'm not allowing myself to feel happy with my current progress. And I'll just feel happy when I get to that outcome. And so any of those things that you're lighting on fire and just burning, you have to be able to pause and go, wait a second. Let's come back to the present moment and look at it so that I can actually feel like, you know what? I'm on pace for that now. I get to reward myself right now for doing the things that are going to lead to that outcome. I get to reward myself right now for honoring these other values I have and showing up for my kids or whatever, even though it means that goal might come slightly later or something like that. And I was coaching one of the guys on my team about his personal finances, and this was, he just was dealing with this issue of he was saving so much and being so financially responsible that he was just always unhappy in the present moment. And it's not a common problem. Usually you have the problem of people indulging too much in the short term and then being unhappy about their future because they don't have enough saved. And for him, it was like he was so consumed with making sure he was saving and getting his financial future set up that he didn't feel like he could spend any money on his current happiness with his wife and his children and doing things. And when he made that shift of like, no, I have to allocate some portion of my finances to actually go to that today. And when I look at the math, it actually only moves the needle on certain goals I have by maybe a year, 2 years. But then the whole journey of the next 15 years, I'm living in happiness. Like that, it's just such a big shift for right now. And so I love that you pointed that out, because anyone listening to this, as soon as you catch yourself thinking that, I think that's a moment for pause and for evaluation.
Yeah. The one thing I just love to add into that, like I talk about this in my book, Maybe You Should Give Up, but it's about recognizing that happiness doesn't come from some result somewhere in the future. Like we're all guilty, we convince ourselves that once we achieve something, then we'll be happy. But actually, happiness comes from the journey, and the journey takes place in the present. And this is why you have to learn to slow down and really embrace the good and the bad, the challenges and the wins. You need to recognize the progress that you make along the way. Because if you're just focusing on the end result, it's never going to feel like it's enough. Or when you get there, something's still going to be missing. And you're going to convince yourself, oh, that wasn't it. I need this. And it's always going to be somewhere in the future. So it's really about slowing down and being like, do you know what? Are you doing the work? Are you doing the things that you should? Are you then prioritizing things for that matter most? That's how you can start to embrace happiness. Whereas if you're just living in the future, it's always going to feel like something is missing. And this is one of the most difficult shifts to make. Like, it's something that every single person I worked with and even myself struggle with. And it's just, that's why I'm such a big advocate in just slowing down and becoming aware of the choices and actions you're making every single day. Where are you spending your time? What are you choosing to do? It's like, for me personally, like one of my big intentions for the day is like, what can I do today to bring joy into my life? Like, what can I do for myself that will make me happy? And it's just being really deliberate about that focus and attention, because otherwise you just get lost going through the motions, and a week and then a month and a year passes by and you just don't know where the time's gone.
I've developed a bit of a reflex where the second I go through the day and don't and feel like it's happening to me instead of it's me doing what I had planned the night before, that is like my first sign immediately. If I go through one day and I'm like, oh, what do I have next? Oh, what am I get, oh yeah, I got to do that. Like I have to do things. It's an obligation. It's showing up to the meetings. It's whatever, as opposed to, oh, last night I really planned this out. I knew I was excited to meet with Byron and do a really good podcast. I was excited about, you know, after that, what I was going to be working on. And I prioritized and really meaningfully put the things that I knew would help me feel like I was achieving my goals and succeeding. And I planned what I wanted to do with my kids that night. Like when I'm planning and really designing my life and then seeing it as this opportunity to be on that journey, my happiness is so much higher. It's incredible. And the second I find myself fall into that pattern of like, okay, what's the next, what's on the calendar? What do I got to show up to? What am I obligated to? That is like my first early warning signal to be like, wait, stop. There's something wrong. Because it's the same stuff. I do the same activities more or less. You know, obviously when you plan, you're more effective and you'll do better activities, but oftentimes it's similar, if not the same activities. It's totally a difference of my experience of it and going through obligation and having a very negative experience versus having an opportunity to pursue things that I put on my calendar for a reason, I chose to do, I'm excited to do, and then enjoying that experience to the fullest. And being in the present allows you to enjoy that, allows you to appreciate the journey. So I don't know, that's what's worked for me as an early warning signal, but I think everyone needs to have a way to recognize when they're falling into that pattern, because it's such a destructive one. Like you said, it can be a week, a month, and then you're just looking back going, what the hell happened in my life? What have I been doing? I've been a zombie. Well, I'm very curious, just a couple more questions here before we got to wrap up. I'm very curious for you, you know, who are some of the influences and or what are some of the books that, just a few of the very most significant ones that have had the most meaningful impact? Obviously, everyone should go read your books, but I love reading. And so I'm always looking for the best resources that have meant the most to other entrepreneurs. What are some of those resources for you that you would say, man, I remember my life before and after this book or this mentor or this experience?
The book that changed my life actually had nothing to do with business. Back when I was first trying to like turn my health around, I read a book called Bigger, Leaner, Stronger by Mike Matthews. And for some, not only did it give me like a whole new perspective on like health and fitness and kind of getting in shape, for me, it just really reignited this fire of, do you know what? I really want to learn to be a writer. Like that was the book that for me just inspired me of being like, do you know what? I've been learning all of this stuff. I want to pass this on to other people, because I saw a very similar trajectory. Like Mike had been like one of those people who had struggled with his own goals. He'd figure out how to do it differently, and then he wanted to pass it on to others. And while our journeys were kind of different, that was the big motivation for me. Like my first book, that was the catalyst of being like, do you know what? I could do this myself. So that was very much the one that changed my life. Like we wouldn't be talking today if I never read that book. So well, from a kind of personal standpoint, like I've reached out to Mike as well before, like him and I've kind of spoken on kind of email and stuff. And like, he's like one of the big people I look up to. So he's had such a positive influence on kind of my journey. But then more from a business sense, like some of my favorite books are, I think the hard thing about hard things is like a mindset book that every kind of entrepreneur should read. I'm also a big, I love Gary Vaynerchuk. He's like one of my kind of big heroes. I'm a big kind of, we talk about a lot of the same stuff about kind of mindset and why people don't follow through. I'm a big kind of believer in his content. And then you mentioned him already, but Tony Robbins, I think that's, he's just such a powerful force to be reckoned with. And it's just like anyone kind of wanting to start their personal development journey, I think he's such a great kind of person to learn from, because he's worked with and dealt with so many people. It's just a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, what a great list to start with. I think those are, I mean, I've had great experiences with all those. That's one of my favorite entrepreneurial books as well, The Hard Thing About Hard Things. I remember reading that and just being like, yeah, this guy gets it, and learning a ton. You know, it's, but it's very validating, because it's, there's so many books out there that are, you know, here's, if you just learn this formula, you're good. This solves everything. And you're just like, that's not what makes it hard. It's, if there was just one formula.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but it's just like, the reason I love that book, when you're an entrepreneur, a lot of the time you feel like you're the only one going through these problems. And like one of my current clients at the moment, like he is going through so many issues, like board members and fundraising, all of these things. And it's just like, as soon as something goes right, something else goes wrong. And like, it's just, so many things. Like I keep saying to him, like, you need to read this book just to see how, do you know what? This is an example of someone who's come out the other side. It's just like all of the things going wrong are kind of a stepping stone. And one of like the big piece of advice I gave him was like, if it was easy, everyone else would do it. And it would also make for a pretty boring autobiography. And that's why you've got to go through the bad if you want to get the good. And it's just, this is why I love people that talk about the challenges in business, because everyone's always on about like all the good things and you do this and you'll make loads of money and all of this great stuff. And whereas anyone who's ever run a company knows it's a completely different story. Like they know it, like you can be in a situation where you can do everything right and you can still come up short, or you can have your best ever day and 5 minutes later, it can be like a punch to the stomach and everything's falling apart. And this is why I believe you've got to be a special kind of crazy to be an entrepreneur, because you're essentially just signing up for a life of ups and downs and just everything going wrong. And if you don't mentally have the resilience to deal with that, you're just going to be absolutely miserable. And it's only a matter of time before you burn out and quit. And that's why I think so many people need to be prepared for what it actually is. It's not all sunshines and rainbows and fancy parties and private planes. Like, it's just never-ending kind of battles and fights. And that's really what the life that you're signing up for.
Well said. Probably no better way to wrap up than with that. So if people would like to work with you, or they want to read one of your books and get some help in their life, byronmorrison.com, byronmorrison.com is the best place probably to find you, I assume. Is there any other places that you'd like people to connect with you or engage with you?
Yeah, the best place to check me out is on LinkedIn. I put out daily content on there. And also, like I said earlier, I've started to do a big push on YouTube. So I've done a load of videos and everything from managing your time to making decisions, being an effective leader, and really kind of stepping into that role of CEO. So again, just search for Byron Morrison or the Effective CEO and all of that will come up.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming, Byron. It's been a great chat.
Thanks for having me on.
Hey, before you go, I have a small request. Our mission is to empower as many people as possible to maximize their potential through the power of leverage. Could you help us in this mission by leaving a review on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube? And if you know just one person who would benefit from today's episode, would you please share it with them? Your support means the world to us, and we are thrilled to have you in the community. Thank you for being a part of our journey and helping us grow. You can find show notes for today's show and past shows at lessonsinleverage.com, which also has links to connect with me personally and connect with our various podcast channels across your favorite social networks. A big thanks to Solve.cloud, who sponsored this episode. They're a group of expert consultants that help SaaS and financial services companies to implement, optimize, and manage Salesforce.com. They can help you with custom integration solutions and are helping customers to implement some of the most important generative AI technologies. You can find them at Solved.cloud. That's solved.cloud is the URL. Thanks again, and we'll talk soon.